Nick Pope with us. We're going to take your phone calls as we talk about extraterrestrials. Full disclosure, we're going to talk with Nick about the Rendlesham case in a moment, the incredible case that happened in December of 1980. Truly remarkable, way up there with Roswell. Nick might even tell you it's the best UFO case out there. Welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Nick Pope with us, and we're going to take your phone calls as well as we talk about various UFO cases as well. Nick, let's talk a little bit about Rendlesham. You believe that's one of the best cases out there, don't you?
Absolutely, yes. And I think whether it's bigger than Roswell or not, I'm not sure, but it's more recent, and of course, as such, it's much more likely that we'll maybe get a solution to it at some stage. Roswell now, I'm not so sure. You know, none of the direct first-hand witnesses, I think, are with us anymore in the case of Roswell, but with Rendlesham, they are, and that does give us some hope.
That's true. You wrote a book called Encounter in Rendlesham Force, along with John Burroughs and Jim Peniston, both of the United States Air Force, retired. Let's talk about Rendlesham. Happened when, 1980?
Yes, December 1980, over a series of three nights. And, three consecutive nights. The landing, of course, on the first night, and then on the third night, the incident where the witnesses included the deputy base commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Holt. And what makes this case, I think, so compelling is the physical evidence we have. This, whatever this was, it was tracked on radar. It left indentations in the frozen solid ground, you know, where an object estimated to have weighed several tons actually came down. But more than that, in terms of what makes it compelling, the radioactivity levels assessed by the MOD's defense intelligence staff as being significantly higher than the average background. And none of that's disputed. The Ministry of Defense file on this has been declassified and released. So all the data's out there.
Didn't Jim Peniston get close enough to touch the object, and did he get sick or something?
Yes, Jim says that he actually put his hand on this thing, probably not a smart move, as I think he's jokingly kind of acknowledged now after the event. Both John and Jim have had some health issues. Now, obviously for reasons of medical confidentiality, I can't discuss much about that. I mean, even though they have put out some limited information themselves, but I have to be careful that I don't say anything that they wouldn't be comfortable with. But it's no secret that John, through the intervention, firstly of a lawyer called Pat Frasconia, who did hours and hours of pro bono work on this, but secondly, through the good offices of Senators McCain and Senators Kyle, John managed to get a settlement from the VA as a direct result of, essentially the British government's Project Condyne report, because there was a throwaway line tucked away in one of the working papers of Project Condyne's final report, where it said that the Rendlesham Forest incident was a case where it might be postulated that UAP witnesses were exposed to UAP radiation for longer time periods than would usually be the case in a sighting. UAP, of course, is British government speak for UFO, unidentified aerial phenomena. But it was when that was put in front of the VA that they settled. And John has disclosed at least part of his VA settlement. And it actually says that Project Condyne's final report, where the Ministry of Defense talk about the radioactivity levels at Rendlesham, that was one of the documents they assessed when making the settlement.
Peniston saw some symbols on this craft. It remembered them perfectly. Very strange, weren't they?
Yes. I have certainly looked at those. I know that a number of symbologists have looked at them. Jim is currently doing ongoing research with an esoteric writer, Gary Osborne, trying to piece together just what all the symbols and codes that he recalls might mean. And, heck, I don't know. I think you need to be a cryptographer to,
yeah,
to get to the bottom of it.
I mean, it is something. It means something. Who knows what?
Yeah. Now, you know, who knows what it's going to say? And when they publish the data, which I think they're going to, I will be very interested. We did cover it briefly, of course, in Encounter in Rendlesham Forest, but in an overview of the case, we could only look at that very, very briefly. And of course, work has been going on since with a whole bunch of people who are much smarter than me when it comes to things like mathematics and geometry and cryptography and things.
What happened to the craft when it finally left, and how did it leave?
Well, they encountered it in a small clearing, and the way that this was told to me, the craft was on the ground, then rose up vertically, like you know, some of the military jets that can do that, but obviously this thing was radically different. Very slowly rose vertically up, and then when it was clear of the treetops, it just shot off to the horizon in literally seconds. And that's a description that I've heard time and time again from a lot of witnesses, including military witnesses from some other cases.
Are you still there, Nick?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. You cut off for just a split second. I mean, they're bizarre signals. You've got them on your website, nickpope.net, under Rendlesham Forest. People should take a look at it. They're very weird, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I mean, I don't know what they mean. I've had a number of people who you know far more about geometry and symbology than I do contact me with some theories. And as I say, I know Jim Peniston and Gary Osborne are going to publish much more material on this as soon as possible. And I'm very eager to see what they come up with.
All right, let's go to the calls. We'll pick it up by going to Robert in Kingman, Arizona, west of the Rockies, to get us started. Hi, Robert. Thanks
Hi,
for
George.
Calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a question for Mr. Pope.
All right.
I've always been befuddled by this. Aliens come from other planets out there, and I totally believe that in the vast expanse of space out there. Of course, there's other life forms. But they come to Earth, and they hide from us, but suddenly it's like, oops, and they appear, and we see them and encounter them. And I know it could be alien psychology that we can't even understand, but I have often wondered about that. If they have that much technology and everything, they could hide where we could never find them and, you know, observe us. And I wondered what your take on that might be.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, maybe it's something we can never really understand. I mean, the problem with all of this, of course, is we can only come at it from an anthropocentric viewpoint. And you know, what strikes us as odd and inconsistent may, to an extraterrestrial civilization, make perfect sense. And the other thing is, if you take the view that it's a broadly speaking, I suppose, a sort of exploration anthropology type situation, then you get into the scenario that you would want to keep interaction to a minimum. So if we're being observed in our natural habitat, but you could probably, you'd probably have to, at some stage show your hand. And you know, we mustn't fall into the trap of thinking that these aliens are absolutely infallible. If we're being visited, you know, we look at our own technology, and people say, I know this wasn't your question, but it's a similar analogy. People often say, well, if aliens can come all the way to Earth and they're so powerful, why would they crash at Roswell? And my response is always, if you look at human technological development, we have not yet hit a point where there's no such thing as human error or a part failing or, you know, something just going wrong.
Next up, Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Michael.
Hello, George, and hello, Nick. Nick, you sound very sincere, and I believe you are, but I'm afraid you're being used. And I can only explain this by an analogy. I think you and people like Alexander, Colonel Alexander, what's his first name?
John.
Yes. I think you're all being used because you're not at the center of where the real information is. And here's my analogy. Today, and you've been a part of British government, so you should understand this. Today, the Attorney General for the United Kingdom went before Parliament and apologized for having anything to do with the CIA's torture chamber in Thailand. Now, this is while the confirmation hearing is going on for the woman that headed that torture chamber. So they didn't send somebody from MI6 who would more logically have made that apology. They didn't send somebody from the Department of Defense. They sent the Attorney General. They're playing games to keep it from being a direct head-on hit that the average citizen will recognize for what it is. The same has happened with this whole UFO thing. Every time you guys appear on this show, and I think both you and John Alexander are sincere, but you're in the dark. You don't really know what's going on.
Nobody does. Nobody does, Michael. Go ahead. You want to react to that, Nick?
Well, on the first part, obviously, I'm not going to comment on those intelligence matters to do with rendition and enhanced interrogation techniques. That's not something that I'm obviously going to comment on. As to whether I'm in the dark and whether somewhere in government there's someone who knows all about it, and I'm just being used in some way. Well, who knows? All I can say is that I ran that program for the UK and to the best of my knowledge, with my security clearance and my need to know, I didn't ever feel that something was being hidden from me by my own organization. But of course, I can't rule it out. I guess it's what Donald Rumsfeld would have called an unknown unknown.
Next up, we go to Joe in Long Island, New York now. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Nick. I got two quick questions. First, if you look at the universities such as Caltech with their JPL, wouldn't that be less secretive than, say, the Pentagon? And also, from their telescopes, could they identify craft inter-solar system? I mean, how good is just, say, a small craft if it was flying, somewhere within the solar system? Is that easily seen? Second thing would be the idea of color phenomenon. Now, I don't think I've ever seen a UFO, but I was jogging in Montana back to the Many Glacier Hotel on the road, and it was sheer orange on the road, and it came down from the sky. And then it wasn't only me. I got back to the hotel, and the people, were buzzing about it. It also hit there. So it was a color phenomenon. I assumed it was just from the high altitude and from the clouds and some sort of something to do with that rather than a UFO. But just the idea of like a sheer color phenomena where, like complete envelope of color on the ground.
Well, let me, that's interesting. And actually, although I disagreed with the broad conclusions of it, one of the ideas floated in Project Condyne, which is the Ministry of Defense intelligence assessment that I mentioned, was the idea that exotic atmospheric plasma phenomena might explain some of the more bizarre UFO experiences. So, again, atmospheric plasmas is something that we still don't really fully understand, but it's worth looking at, and there's some material on that in Project Condyne. As to the first part of your question, it's one of those great interesting cliches. People say, oh, astronomers don't see UFOs. Actually, they do. I mean, I've spoken to several of them. Now, whether some of the big powerful telescopes are actually the sort of thing that would be used in this sort of search, I'm not sure, because they're perhaps more figured for further away targets than something in our atmosphere. But the technology is getting better and better, and of course the satellite technology is getting better and better. And you know, if they're out there, we should be able to find them. It's just sometimes having the mindset that we should be looking.
We take text and tweets. Tom, what do you have for Nick?
Now, this one for a text from Carrie in Washington. Can you please have Nick talk about a case called the Lonnie Zamora sighting and its significance to ufology today?
Oh, well, this was the Socorro incident.
Great story.
The police officer, Lonnie Zamora, saw this almost like egg-shaped.
Yep, a white. He thought it was a car that was tipped over. And as he got closer, he realized this thing's on tripods with the two little beans standing around.
Yeah. Now, the pretty much the only skeptical theory that I've heard about this is that, you know, this was maybe some sort of secret test of the lunar landing module, and that the figures were astronauts in spacesuits and things. But, you know, if that had been the case, Project Blue Book, who looked at this, would have just been warned off, and someone would have just had a quiet word and said, look, you know, that's something we're working on, no need to worry about that. But that didn't happen, and this was the case that very famously annoyed J. Allen Hynek, the scientific consultant to Project Blue Book. And after this, he became so frustrated with the Air Force that he turned around and his phrase was, well, the Air Force just don't understand how science works.
I love it. Yeah. And thanks a lot for that.
No, but it's a great case.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick, for everything you've been doing, what has been the most rewarding aspect of what you've done?
Well, I think it is the live events, whether it's the ones that we've done together, for example, in Salt Lake City and Toronto, or whether it's some of the other conferences where we appear and actually get a chance to not just have a kind of 30-second call from someone, but you know, someone can come up and say hi and tell us in some detail about something. And I think it's that opportunity to get out on the road and meet people face to face, as opposed to just being someone that you see on TV or hear on radio.
Absolutely. Nick, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment and take more of your phone calls here as we talk about UFOs, government disclosure with Nick Pope, formerly of the British Ministry of Defense. And as you heard him, he is anxiously waiting for three more UFO files to be released. He'll post them on his website, nickpope.net, when he gets them. I'm looking forward to seeing those too. But let's come back in a moment and take more of your calls, and we'll see what we'll do next hour with Nick, depending on how many of the calls come in and want to talk with him. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, Nick Pope with us. Nick, what does your gut tell you about this object at Rendlesham? What do you think it was?
I honestly don't know. It is literally an unidentified flying object.
Did you ever get a chance to meet J. Allen Hynek in your day?
No, I didn't. That's a great regret. I think we would have had some fascinating conversations, but no, the time periods simply didn't overlap.
That would have been fantastic to have met him. I remember in Detroit, I was 19 years old working at a television station, and he was in Michigan, and that's when he coined the phrase swamp gas. And that followed him and haunted him for his entire career. Even though he became a proponent believing in UFOs, he couldn't shake that swamp gas thing.
No. You know, maybe I have a similar moment, but hopefully I won't make a gaffe like that. But if I do, yes, these things do stick. But no, he died a few years before I was appointed to the UK government's UFO program. So, of course, we never got to meet.
Wrote the great book, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which was turned into that movie.
Yes, I've read all his books. His books were classics, as of course the book by former Blue Book head Edward Ruppel.
Yes,
is again one of those classic old books that far too few people in this field have ever read.
And Frank Edwards, remember him, mm-hmm. the journalist?
Yeah,
great stuff too. Do you communicate with Stanton Friedman at all, Nick?
Not really. I mean, we are on very good terms. I mean, but frankly, I only see, like a lot of people, I guess, in this field, we only tend to catch up with each other at the conferences. I last saw him at the UFO Congress in Phoenix, and we had a nice catch up there. And of course, he's pretty much announced that he is going to retire from all this, at least, you know,
or slow down a little bit.
Slow down. I think he's still obviously going to follow the subject, but I don't think he's going to travel. I mean, he's given over the years, literally, I suppose, thousands of talks to schools, colleges, local groups, UFO conferences, etc., etc. And my goodness, he's put a heck of a lot of work into spreading the word on this. So if ever anyone deserved a retirement and a rest from this and a chance to slow down, it's Stan. I think he's doing one last public appearance in Roswell this summer.
1971, he was my first radio interview in Detroit. He was there to address a university. And I saw this little clipping in the Detroit News, and I asked my news director if I could go cover it, and he said, I'm not going to pay for it. He said, no overtime for this. So I went on my own with my tape recorder and interviewed him. 1971, and who would ever think years later he'd end up being on my local St. Louis show and now Coast to Coast? I mean, and we've remained close friends. Small world.
Yeah. Oh, he's a great guy, and at conferences over the years, you know, we've had some great chats and things. But it's one of those great regrets, in a sense, that sometimes because of our respective schedules, it's the same with a whole bunch of people. We really only get a chance to catch up at the conferences.
What do you think of the Barney and Betty Hill case? Still one of the best abduction cases I think I've come across.
Yeah, me too. I did have the great experience of spending some time with Betty. Barney, of course, had died some years ago and long before I had any official involvement in this subject. But I met Betty, I think it must have been in about 1995 when I went to a conference in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And Pete and Fran Jeremiah up there hosted a great conference, and I got to meet Betty. She was the guest of honor, and my goodness, she was a feisty lady.
I interviewed their psychiatrist, again, back in 1971, Dr. Benjamin Simon. What a great interview that was.
And of course, there was quite a lot of tension, wasn't there, between him and Fuller,
John Fuller wrote the book about him, The Interrupted Journey.
Yes.
Simon said to me, when I asked him specifically, I said, Doctor, are they lying? And he went, they are not lying. I don't know what happened to them. And he really prefaced that. But he said, whatever happened to them, they believe it happened.
Yes.
They're not lying. And that to me was astounding, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it's something that I've come up against time and time again in my investigation of this sort of phenomenon. And you know, most of the people that I've dealt with are absolutely sincere. Now, some of them, of course, it may turn out they're mistaken in their beliefs, but they are sincere, and whatever happened to these people, generally speaking, they're not lying. And I go back to a point I made earlier. I think somebody might be more inclined to hoax a civilian UFO researcher, but my goodness, I think people would think twice before they did it to the government in case we sent the men in black round to have a quiet word.
Back to the calls now. Larry, truck driving in Louisiana on the Wild Card line. Larry, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, I got a good friend that was a military police officer back in 1980 over there in Germany with the UFO sightings over in that forest.
Okay.
And he was witnessed the lights come down the first night, and two gentlemen went into the forest. The second night, the two other men that went into the Air Force guys that went into the forest the night before wanted to carry or take him in there. And he refused to go because he was scared to death. But that second night, he saw the lights go into the forest, but he lost time. I was just wondering if any other military people on that base that night saw those lights, but lost
time.
Lack of time.
Interesting.
And,
Nick,
and my second question is, I grew up in southeast Wyoming, outside of Cheyenne, home of F.U. Warren Air Force Base. I knew a few other military MPs that did security work for the missile silos out in eastern Wyoming and western Nebraska. Now, some of the silos are manned, and then there's others that are unmanned. I've been hearing stories over the years that some of the manned silos, they would get reading that there was a unidentified aircraft outside of the manned missile silos. But nobody was able to see them, but their computers went down and also lost contact of the affiliated non-manned silos. I was wondering if the radar picked up, would they be still in, like, I don't know, invisible or what? I guess that's my question to your guest.
Okay, and I'll let you listen off the air. First of all, his first question was, did anybody at Rendlesham that you might have known, Nick, lose time?
Well, I think both John Burroughs and Jim Peniston have, if not said outright, have certainly implied that there might be some unaccounted for time with that. And I've heard the figure of 45 minutes given and the suggestion that they were about to send a search party out into the forest when they returned. I think without a detailed timeline, it's very difficult to nail that down. And of course, the other problem with all of this is that I know that people that make a study of cases of alleged alien abduction talk about missing time. But going back to what we do know about electromagnetic effects and radioactivity, I think there's another question about just physically, were their watches affected? Now, I don't know. This is a very good question. To the best of my knowledge, I've not actually even asked them, but I think the answer is no, because they would have volunteered it in their statement. I don't think they ever turned in any watches for examination. But, of course, that would be an interesting thing to follow up on.
Sure.
In relation to the second question. Yes, I mean,
of radar, course, of course.
Yeah, it's well known that there have been incidents around some of these facilities. I think Minot and Maelstrom. I know Robert Salas has written extensively about some of those cases. I'm not sure. I can't recall offhand what the position was with radar. But of course, having done this for the British government, I know full well that was any of this tracked on radar is almost literally the first question that you would ask in any UFO investigation.
Let's go to Steve in North Dakota now. Hey, Steve, go ahead.
Hey, good evening there, George.
Hey there. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome. This is my fourth time calling in, you know, and all that. But, my question is, could it be possibly a lot of this stuff that folks are seeing in the evening sky just isn't military prototypes? I'm thinking back to 1986 in Los Angeles when military aircraft had crash-landed in a residential neighborhood, and the military corridored the area off, and public became alarmed because they thought that this aircraft might have been carrying a nuclear warhead. And later on, President Reagan came on the news and disclosed that the aircraft that had crashed there was actually the B-1 bomber here.
Huh.
And that's what I'm kind of wondering, because I heard earlier here, a gentleman talked about a fellow in Poland and a couple other places seeing something that looks like a cigar. Maybe that's some sort of like drone aircraft, and they're just prototypes. That's what people are seeing. And the reason the government isn't talking about it is, like, well, it's still top secret. And, you know, I guess the way I look at it, it's good guys that are working with this stuff. You know, there's a reason why they're keeping it quiet.
You ever hear a story like that, Nick?
Absolutely, yes. There's no getting away from the fact that absolutely a number of UFO sightings clearly are and have been over many years attributable to people stumbling across and seeing secret prototype aircraft and more recently drones. Yes. Now, I think I would put two qualifying points on that. Firstly, those sorts of things generally are test flown in fairly clearly defined ranges and not the sorts of places where the public would generally see them. And secondly, for those of us who've looked at this from within government in a UFO program, of course, even if we're not read into the specific details of any classified program, somebody would have had a quiet word with us if we had started poking our noses into something we shouldn't have been. And somebody would have simply taken us aside and said, actually, no need to look at that. That's one of ours, even if we can't tell you the details. So, yes, some of these things do turn out to be classified programs, but those of us in government can generally kind of tell when that is the case and factor that in.
All right, Tom, text or tweet, what do you have for us, Ben?
This one's from Barry in Grand Rapids. What does Nick think about the theory that Bigfoot is an extraterrestrial creature?
I'm afraid that's completely outside my my area of expertise.
Or from another dimension. But yeah. I think it's a creature from this planet myself.
Yeah, I just don't know. It's not something I've looked into, I'm afraid.
Nick, a couple minutes to go. Did you want to stick around for another hour of calls? What's your situation?
I can. If the calls are coming in, I can do it. It's your call.
They are coming in. There's no question about that, my
friend. I will stay.
Let's go to Roy in Toronto, east of the Rockies. Hey, Roy, go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Just wanted a quick question. Nick, is there ever a time that you'll be in Toronto doing a conference?
Well, I've been a couple of times. In fact, George and I were up there with Alex Jones.
That's right.
3 years ago. So I've done some filming up in Toronto as well. You know, so
I'd like to get us back, Nick. Maybe a live stage show or something.
Yeah, that would be great. It's a great city, and yeah, look forward to coming back.
Sure is. You got to come see us if we're out there, Rob. You have to do that, indeed. Next up, Jay in Indiana, first-time caller. Hey, Jay, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
I got a question for you. What do you think about UFOs/paranormal? And the reason why I'm asking you that is, starting in 2008, behind my house, I started seeing these lights pop up, and they make formations. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going crazy. I got a video camera and started taking videos. I probably have 15 plus videos.
Wow.
Different areas, different. Sometimes they show up red.
And witnesses? Have you had people see it too with you?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And, I've had MUFON out to my house 3 times. But the reason I asked you this is because every time I see a flap, or when I see a bunch of them in the area at a time, that strange things happen around my house.
And what do you mean by strange? Like what?
The lights smash out, come back on, smash out, come back on. And there's a strange, like, frequency buzz.
Okay, well, both of those, Nick, they do happen around UFO events, don't they?
Yes, they do. But it's a very interesting point. I know a lot of people who actually quite strongly object to the idea that if you go into a bookstore, for example, or a library, that the UFO books are in the paranormal section. And a lot of people say, look, even if we believe that these things are extraterrestrials coming to Earth, in one sense, there's nothing paranormal about it. It's, you know, it would be amazing and very unusual, but it wouldn't be paranormal in the sense that maybe people think about, I don't know, ghosts or something like that. It would simply be a slightly more advanced technologically version of what we are already doing.
Okay, Nick, hold on. We're going to come back. It's the top of the hour already. We'll continue chatting about UFOs and take calls next.